Thank you, Tim. Oh, what a joy to be back with you again this week and to have with us a very dear friend of mine. And just, to kind of review a little bit of where we've been and where we're going with this series, we began looking at Jesus as a teacher of singleness and how we might transform our consciousness in order to see beyond this dual nature that we ordinarily inhabit in our lives. And we moved into looking at the structures of consciousness, and we're right in the middle of that final phase of that mental structure of duality. And Rebecca Parker so beautifully showed us how we may look at our incarnation as part of this whole dualistic nature, and how Jesus has called us to move into a larger frame of consciousness. And so we began last week with our dear friend and mentor, Cynthia Bourgeau, who introduced us to this concept of how evil has arisen and how it comes out of our dualistic nature. And so the next few weeks, we're going to be diving a little bit deeper into some of the aspects of evil. And today we've invited Harrison to come with us and talk about the personal aspects of evil. And he's a fellow psychotherapist, and we've been really interested in how this impacts us on a psychological and personal level as well. Harrison has become a very, very dear friend of mine. I've been able to journey with him these last few years during the pandemic as well. Personally, we've been looking at some of these aspects, and you'll meet Buddy Parker next week. We've journeyed together looking at how this notion of evil and disorder has impacted our culture as well as our world. And so what we're hearing today is an outgrowth of that study. And Harrison has been a Living School student, and he's also a spiritual director, and he's a very, very well-respected and gifted psychotherapist in the national area. And so I would like to welcome him. He's one of our senior wisdom students and has a wealth of information to share with us today. So if we could do our blessing, as ordinarily we do every week, from our late Tom Heck, I would like you to all raise your hands and we will sing a blessing.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
Harrison, it's all yours.
Thank you, Marianne, for a wonderful introduction. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I feel like there's a lot to cover, and yet this journey is always ever expanding and unfolding as we, learn about ourselves and relationship to each other in the world. Part of what I see is, while I want to honor what we've read in chapter 7 and Wisdom Jesus and the couple of sections of Richard Rohr's book, I don't want to get too into the theology side. I see my role as how does the theology meet psychology, meet what we know of science. But my expertise certainly is bringing, what I after 30 plus years as a psychotherapist in my office, and the various combination of challenges that's presented to me in people's lives. I've had a front row seat to learning about how does all this stuff interact within ourselves, with each other. And so I want to pick up where Cynthia, she kind of queued some things up really well for today to get into the, so how do we stay present to ourselves in the face of evil? I think we have to be careful that we certainly are familiar with personality disorders. If somebody's a severe narcissist or borderline or bipolar, but not all people with a personality disorder are evil. We all have ways of sinning, missing the mark, an evil act, but that doesn't mean we're operating in, you know, deep, deep place where we're, you know, in that cycle of evil and power, you know, to deplete, almost consume another person or group. So I just want to kind of start there to kind of, you know, set the structure of as we're going into today's gathering, what's the art by which we have to listen to ourselves mentally, emotionally, and even our bodies to stay in what I call a Tai Chi space, where I'm trying to stay present to what's going on in the relational field of interaction and the interconnectivity. But we get in trouble when we get cut off from ourselves, if we're cut off by overthinking, or we're cut off from other parts of ourselves, if we're immersed in our emotions and we're in a fight, flight, or freeze mode, if we've suppressed a lot of that thoughts and feelings into our bodies and we're living a compartmentalized way, then we get into trouble. It's hard to have full seeing, you know, an expansive seeing. And, you know, certainly Cynthia in her book, you know, with Mary talking about Mary Magdalene and the apostles and that place of oneness, that living spirit, but what she was speaking from, different than, you know, compartmentalized view. And as we get into the psychology as well as science of how do our left brains operate? What's going on in our right brains? But I tend to left brains logic, and our left brains can only divide the field between what it can contrast, what's up, what's down, what's right or wrong, what's in, what's out. And so that skews right from the beginning, not, you know, to divide the field, and we only partially see. Certainly our right brain, where our emotional intelligence lies, how do we be present to the emotional frequencies and the energy emotionally? But if that's underdeveloped, that can, you know, certainly flood us. And even if it is developed, we all have moments in which we get broadsided by the extreme parts of someone else. And so, and then we also have our body that houses it all. And so how do we move towards greater oneness so that we can see, you know, what Jesus was talking about and not operate out of the left brain, you know, egoic system, that it's all about, you know, my ego project, or I'm the center of the universe. So I like to kind of look at some of this on a continuum. Over here could be the most extreme ways in which one, you know, unconsciously, in some cases, I wonder how an evil person in the extreme end of the continuum might be consciously, I want to premeditate in a way to take abuse power in this relationship. Most of us don't encounter the most extreme evil person in our daily lives, but there can be strong tendencies on that end of the continuum versus wherever all of us in a given moment or experience in our daily lives, where we might have an unconscious moment that we make ourselves, you know, the center of the universe, or it's my belief system over yours. So working off of what Cynthia, for those of you that were able to listen to it, if you weren't there last week, the last wisdom school that they had last week, they further hammered out, you know, emerging definition of evil that I want to reread to kind of anchor some of my teaching and hopefully provide, you know, some stimulation for discussion when you guys break out in a session. The definition, I think that was emailed to everybody as well, but evil is a toxically disturbed and contagious energy field active in an individual or individuals through the enactment of habitually imprinted urge to destroy or harm others in order to preserve one's own ego and self-structure. So I think that really captures what's going on there. And I think the emphasis is there's this energy field that's, I want to say, that's going on inside of us that we have to pay attention to, as well as the other person. And so when we aren't present to how our thoughts in a healthy way can inform our feelings, and our feelings can inform our thoughts, and how our body knows, and how we can know something in our gut, not just from our head or purely emotional, there's a higher degree of presence to be able to discern when there's this intense energy coming at me, or if it's very subtle energy that I don't know I'm being manipulated into an abusive situation, either, you know, broadsided in the moment if somebody's raging at me, or if I'm in a relationship with somebody, but I slowly but surely lose my bearings, and I get caught in a cycle where I'm not grounded, I'm not operating in a place that I can love myself, love the other person, because we're trying to aspire. How do you do that? But sometimes, in our, my opinion, our Christianity produces a kind of a codependent Christianity. We, you know, codependency in the sense that I want to tell you what you want to, I want to tell you what I think you want to hear so you'll like me. Or I'm trying to control an outcome by not participating. I'm not speaking up. I'm not present and attending to what needs to be addressed right here, either out of self-preservation and, you know, setting a boundary, or learning to disengage. But, you know, codependency has a lot of different shades to it, and that could be a whole talk in itself. But it has to do with how I'm trying to over-control the outcome, either to keep peace, or, you know, the codependent nature. I know Cynthia's talked about this to us, that we can have a naive, when I want to say a codependency understanding of love conquers all. And so if we are not staying present to our three centers, we can encounter individuals, and it seems like we do produce a lot of this in our society, where we might be charmed by someone who, it seems like it's just great. They're listening to me and they understand me. But as the relationship plays out, you guys have probably heard about gaslighting, and when it comes to narcissism and ghosting, it's just pulling, you know, checking out. And where did the person go? I thought we were connecting and relating well. But I like to kind of talk about how on the continuum, where evil to me is where a person's more and more disconnected to themselves, there isn't a severe disturbance in their own energy. They radiate that out if they get triggered. And so that's where it gets into where the habitual habit of that urge to destroy or harm others in order to preserve tightly their own self-structure and ego. And so it becomes a really vicious cycle if one is not aware and they're operating out, you know, they haven't been aware of what codependency is in their life. And if that, you know, need to be liked, need to be, you know, I need to fix, I need to save. There are these different things that could be going on inside of our own histories that we're playing out of. In therapy, sometimes we call that, you know, what is our unresolved family of origin issues. We are all born into a system, and there's no perfect parenting. There are different degrees of healthy or unhealthy families. And so we have to develop, you know, how we relate to that, for better, for worse. But our journey is, how do we waken up and awaken more, that we're not just operating out of our personality, that we have limited viewing. And so our egos may be driving, you know, more driving the bus. So the paradox here is, I think codependency for a person who is encountering somebody really evil, how both parties can be cut off from healthy source. the in Christian terms, how are you disconnected to God, Holy Spirit, divine source. And I'm substituting what I'm relating to in the relationships with others, that I may be unknowingly getting sucked into the cycle of what I'm going to talk about, codependency and narcissism, in just a second. So when we're not staying, present to all these different levels of awareness, and we live more a compartmentalized way, then we are more susceptible to getting sucked in. And I think there's different degrees of that. So I want to be careful here that sometimes we're sucked in and we're operating out of our own unmet needs, our own unresolved grief or trauma that we may not have worked on, or we're encountering the other person's, trauma response. And temporarily, awareness is offline. We're not thinking clearly. Our feelings are not in proportion to what is going on. We might go from 0 to 80 in our reaction internally or externally. So as we get into talking about evil, and let's say the end of the continuum where it's really intense and scary, and it can be unsafe to different degrees, I think there's some signs where you can kind of see see what's missing around this person I'm interacting with, or Buddy's going to get into the, as Richard Rohr was talking in his book for this reading this week, the systems of sin, collective narcissism, and that those are harder to see. It's without some of the stuff we're talking about today, and how do we have to work to be more conscious in a more whole or unified or at being more at one within ourselves and the universe. But a lot of times you can see that a giveaway is if a person has no ability to have remorse, no empathy or sympathy, or worst yet, somebody on this end of the continuum might actually use empathy and sympathy to manipulate further, cause more harm in order to preserve one's own ego and self-structure. So Cynthia also brought up how if the only response to evil is to have an authority, the only way to respond to evil is to have an authority with a superior force. Now, we have to be careful. It's not a superior force that I'm going to somehow interact without being unscathed, or I'm going to have a breakthrough to lead a horse to water to get it to drink. That's still mild shades or major shades of codependency. I'm powerless to change another human being, but I can aid in assessing how, when, and where we interact that can aid in both parties' healing. But if someone is deceiving themselves, and they're not interested in that growth and healing, it doesn't matter if it's conscious or unconscious, the end result is getting sucked in to that individual. And I want to say that we all can have experiences to this to one degree or another, but hopefully it's not at the severest level. But if it is, that there is a way to awaken and find your center again. Now I'm going to talk about do a lot of couples therapy, and I'm going to talk a little bit, give you a vignette about how that can play out in a really vicious cycle on the more severe end. Not all couples I see, of course, to the degree, but I've had enough to know kind of the range of this. But that inner authority, I think, is awakens in us as we are trusting our own gut, what's our inner, our truth. We have to be aware of being broadsided, and but how do we regroup to be centered if I'm going to interact with an individual that I know can be very confusing to me, and the disturbance of the energy field, you know, within and with it externally. So it's so paramount. We grow in our ability to continually to see where our head, our heart and body intersect. And out of that, we have greater capacity to stay grounded in being more present to what spiritually needs to flow through us, and being connected to, in 12-step language, a true higher power. As human beings, we're very capable of finding false higher powers in a variety of people, places, and things that actually are the subject is still codependency. And my universal symbol of this is I'm finding that thing that can make me feel better ASAP, you know, that drug of choice. And not just little drugs only, but it can be a relationship, work, TV, anything that I don't know how to do to stay present without that crutch. So in encountering someone that's evil, it's almost like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Lord of the Rings, but there's the wizard Gandalf has to, they're trying to escape from this evil entity that's chasing them through this large cave system. And they get across this stone bridge across a, you know, crevasse. And he gets everybody behind him, and he takes his staff and says, "You shall not pass." And you know, slams it down. And the force of the authority out of the words, feelings, and the physicality and the physiology of that all are unified. And that's a place that we can speak from energetically that's more powerful than some of the more compartmentalized, not centered ways I've been trying to talk about. Of course, in the movie, the evil spirit, the bridge breaks for half of it. Looks like this, everything's fine. The evil spirit goes down in the crevasse, and Gandalf's turning to think, all right, whew, I've used my authority, took a stand, I'm setting a boundary, but I'm letting go of the outcome that I need to be liked, or I'm trying to save the evil entity to greater awakening. I'm just taking a stand. It's almost like tough love. You know, I love myself to say no, healthy anger rooted in love, not, you know, where I'm going to attack and go total warlike. But unfortunately, in the movie, the evil entity goes down, but in one last reach of energetic tentacle arm, it grabs the Gandalf and pulls him down into the abyss. All is not lost, because there is transformation that occurs down the road in which Gandalf is even, you know, higher being, higher level being in consciousness. So there's lots of elements here to look at visually of how does that apply to ourselves and our lives. So in my profession and in my work and what I'm trying to integrate, full disclosure, you know, some of the stuff that I'm integrating is not typically mainstream psychotherapy. It's not a cookie cutter approach. I'm working with lots of modalities. I'm integrating what I'm learning from the wisdom school, living school, spiritual direction, and psychology. And all this stuff ever gets more and more integrated, and more and more openings and avenues for our capacity to grow in our strength and in our ability to love ourselves and love someone else. I don't think we need to throw the baby out with the bathwater with love conquers all. It's just where is that being used within you? Is it just a nice platitude, but does it have the power and force that's integrated? But in the face of dealing with someone and having a superior force of authority in face of a moment in which I need to take a stand, some of that will sound like this in everyday, in those types of relationships. So that's what I want to shift to. And some of this has to do with the only way to pull this off is if our psychological, our emotional, our spiritual journey continues to further grow in our ability to surrender our ego's need to be in charge. So Cynthia mentioned that last week around, you know, it's the death of the egos. And Richard Rohr talks about it in his writings, that, you know, it's the idea that our egos, you know, the dying before you die, and our egos need to be in the driver's seat 24/7. And so when we can experience a powerlessness, doesn't mean I don't have power to make choices and how, when, and where I set boundaries, but the ability to let go, to surrender all kinds of things. One, I need them to, you know, in a codependent narcissistic relationship, there's a real vicious cycle that you can get sucked into where the person is saying 1 + 1 does not equal, you know, 2. I need to point that out to them. And yeah, intellectually, it's okay to go there a few rounds, but it ultimately, how do I listen to my gut that says, we are not in sync. I have to let go. I have to find the exit ramp versus what compels us to keep going and keep going. And the further I get, keep going, and I don't find those exit ramps, I lose my power. The power is sucked in by the other person, regardless if they're consciously saying, hey, I'm waking up today and I want to manipulate Harrison. And I'm going to do everything I can to destroy or cause harm to get another power boost to my ego. Or if it's unconsciously out of trauma, you know, and when we get activated, our PTSD response can go into fight, flight, or freeze. So we all have moments in which we can regress to a younger age emotionally and respond from that, even though, you know, at 57, I know better. But most of us have an awareness to come back. And it's almost like, oh, that's right, I'm not the center of the universe. Ah. And versus somebody else on the other end of the continuum in terms of individual, more dense evils, like, I, you know, damn right, I'm the center of the universe and I want everything to orbit around me. And that can be clear cut, you can see it a mile away, or it's so subtle and seductive because there's a charming aspect that can lead to going into a trance. And we're all susceptible to it if, you know, if we're in the most extreme circumstances. And so being able to stay connected to safe friends, support system, a community that I can be honest with, I'm not operating out of my false self. You know, I can say, yeah, I don't have it together like anybody else. And how do we regroup, nurture, be some eyes and ears? But if we get cut off in our own, you know, project or you start off, you know, I've seen people where they meet each other and someone can start off with a high self, you know, good self-esteem, a cohesive, you know, self-image, but this other person, they don't know till years later. It's almost like the least common denominator effect where this person can get sucked into getting, the relationship can only grow to the level of the least common denominator. And so sometimes they come to counseling and this partner's like, wait, am I crazy? You know, I thought the color blue was actually blue. My partner tells me it's turquoise, and we argue over that. And so as a person awakens, it's like, whoa, hey, I do have choices. I do have my own opinions. I have a right to my feelings. But developmentally, all this hinges on, can we mature in our ability to learn how, when, and where, and sometimes how much do we express our thoughts, feelings? And so healthy relationships, you're supposed to be a more level, a good enough level playing ground in which both parties recognize each has some autonomy, and we may slip into wanting to pick the weeds in the other person's garden. We can get into trouble, but most of us can come back to, wait a second, that's right, I'm not the center of the universe. They have a right to their own thoughts and feelings just as much as I do. But how do we learn better how, when, and where to communicate and co-create the us, the we? So let me kind of get into that a little bit. And the way codependency and narcissism can be really a vicious cycle is, and here's my, I think it'll work for Zoom, but here's some crude hand gesture illustrations. A lot of times we arrive into relationships, and let's say, a marital partnership where two halves, this is codependency, where two halves make one whole. And there's an unconscious, I'm looking for that which I don't know necessarily I'm missing, but I have a sense that I need to be complete. And so sometimes coming out of our families, to the degree there's severe abandonment or abuse or trauma, I don't know how to be a whole person. Now, I don't think even my children arrive to adulthood whole person, but they may be well aware that there is a journey of continuing to learn. We have to have a healthy ego to, healthy false self to navigate life, to get from point A to point B. But as we go through our lives, to wake up that who I am is greater than my false self or persona that I present to the world. So in terms of codependency, what happens with narcissism and is, let's say person A here, severe narcissist, they've charmed, they've raged, manipulated. And so what happens is person B, over the course of the relationship of many years, doesn't know that their relationship is getting co-opted by person A. Their identity, their sense of personhood, their sense of what is my truth as I know it, even though I'm an imperfect human being going on this journey just like everybody else. And so when I teach this, sometimes we don't see that person B is like a frog on low simmer. And back in the day, I don't know if it's politically correct anymore, but biology classes, they would, put a frog in low simmer with a little bit of water in it. As you gradually turn up the heat in increments, what happens to the frog? The frog dies. It doesn't sense the need to set a boundary, to jump out, move, action, consciousness, to, whoa, something's going on here that's dangerous. So that's similarly can happen in our human relationships, that this person, wants to survive. And so let's say early in the year, first year of marriage, they're like, hey, what are you going to go to dinner? Well, I'd like to do, maybe McDonald's. McDonald's, what? That's the craziest thing. McDonald's people are just that. If you want McDonald's, and this person's kind of startled as to like, whoa, wait, how did we get from 0 to 80? And it then becomes, safe. And, innocently, this person might go, well, it's okay. We could do McDonald's. Maybe in the next month, we're talking about where to go to dinner. This person might say, I've had a tired day. I really don't want to engage in the drama and the intensity of this. I'm going to go ahead and say wherever you want to go. But I have the intention to be authentic and speak my truth another time. Well, that's a slippery slope. In my illustration, that over time, a person can wake up and like, I don't know who I am anymore. I am what this other person's telling me. And that's, I think, getting in closer to, the dynamics of the habitual imprint. And the danger of that is a person can, be lost. They can go into a trance and be cut off within themselves, much less what does that mean to, you know, trust that there's something greater in the cosmos than my ability to do it all by myself. We get separated from all kinds of things, but ultimately, what is that divine source that we continually need to reconnect with? So sometimes when we're too analytical, we can't differentiate between the ideal or reality. And so sometimes in therapy, I'll set two chairs. I'll have two chairs that are across from people, and I'll role play sitting in each chair. And ideal chair, I'll role play, you know, what does it mean to be conscious? And I recognize you, and you have a right to feelings, or I'm aware that I have had these tendencies, and I'm finally watching some free Oprah or going to therapy, and I'm starting to recognize I need to learn to regulate my thoughts and feelings so I can be more present to you instead of flooded and reacted. And now that's music to our ears, ideally, you know, because our left brain goes, oh, yes, that's the person I'm looking for. Then the reality chair, I'll sit in it and I purposely won't look at the person. I'll look in their field of vision, look beyond them, look towards them, but I'm not fully present. And so that disconnection energetically is part of this relationship of codependency and narcissism, in which I'm looking for you to fit it, the person who's more narcissistic. I'm looking you to fit in my box so I can relate to you, but I'm not seeing you as an autonomous individual with the rights to your own thoughts and feelings. And so that's part of getting sucked in to a trance. And so somewhere in here to stay awake is healthy authority, healthy anger. That, wait a second, I do love myself, damn it. You know, but I can't look for that to be validated by the other person. I need your permission or approval for my truth. Can you validate that this is my opinion, or validate that I have these feelings? And that's where it gets really dangerous, where a person who's on, you know, more severely narcissistic, if you want to say evil acts, or they're consciously evil. I mean, there's different degrees of this, and all of it exists. That the vicious cycle of gaslighting and ghosting, and if we're not careful, we can get sucked into all that and lose your objectivity. There's a lot around how we project onto others. And I'll give you a quick little therapy, you know, prop. Here's a climbing rope. And so projection is when my left brain projects onto the other person, you're not doing it right. Or, you know, you're the worst human being in the face of the earth. Our ego, left brain, naturally, like Velcro, grabs it. Because our left brain can only compare and contrast what's up or down. And so if we hang on to that, and I'm chasing after the truth with a person that's not necessarily capable of honoring truth for themselves and hearing my truth as a separate autonomous individual from you, then I get hooked, all my power gets sucked in, or I'm giving all my power to them. And so part of waking up spiritually, psychologically, and emotionally, and paying attention to our three centers and our bodies is, how do I learn to let go of that? Because when I'm holding the rope, intellectually or emotionally, why am I giving the other person as the final word or gospel to my truth? Wait, am I a bad person? No, I agree, disagree. I'm not a bad person. That's the letting go of the rope. And so part of our journey is getting better at identifying when we get hooked or activated, and to be able to let go and check in. Well, wait a second. What's going on inside of me? And how do I detach in a healthy way? How do I agree, disagree? Who has the right interpretation of what's going on? And be present that and that's where we get into better effective communication skills with I statements versus you statements. But with dealing with someone who's severely narcissistic, what we don't, part of the healing process is this phrase of, I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't. And that's a stance in which my ego is going to take a hit. This person might say, you're the worst therapist in the face of the earth, Harrison. I'm no good to myself or the person if I grab that rope. I lose presence. And so we can all develop this capacity to better regulate our thoughts and feelings and notice, you know, when we're behaving, are we behaving closer approximation to a greater presence or am I a reactionary, you know, and what somebody broadsides us or projects onto us can counteractivate our own stuff. And next thing you know, two people are going tit for tat. No, I'm right. You're right. And that's just only goes so far. So just sometimes clients have come back and said, hey, that analogy really works. I can see some situations where I didn't grab the rope. I saw it a mile away. Other times I didn't notice it, but I'm starting to let go of it sooner. And so, yeah, let me kind of wrap up there that I'm helping you guys see that as it applies to our daily lives, family members, friends, coworkers, people we haven't met, our ability to discern and stay present so depends on this journey we're on. How does all of this integrate and what we're learning from Richard and Cynthia and what I'm attempting to try to integrate here for my piece, so that our energies can flow internally and externally. And there's something about the cross here where there's that section of the vertical and the horizontal, which Cynthia's taught us a lot about too. There is a place where we can stand and stay present. Now, not all of us can do that. There are things that I'm able to do now after 30 years with certain, you know, clients that early on I would have, you know, been deer in the headlight look. But the true power of love is being able to, you know, stand in that place, not get lost, but not get eaten alive at the same time. And so there is that tension of opposites that we're trying to live in. So a lot of this is about paradox and learning how to, like Chinese Tai Chi movements. But all of us can develop this. It's just if we're willing to be taught. And it's not something we can do in isolation, though. The power of community, you know, where's the economy of grace and mercy? Richard talked about that in his book. And so that we can be more awake. The world needs this versus, you know, sleepwalking through life. So I'm starting to get cotton mouth. So I will shift to the breakout sessions. And a question, I think, just to kick things off, just, you know, share at the level you feel comfortable. Don't share something that maybe is still raw and tender and you've never worked with it. You know, take care of yourselves. But what experience have you had in relationships over your life that you've noticed that you've been sucked in to the intensity of the other person's projections, you know, if it's the charm or the narcissistic rage, where you've been seduced and you didn't know it? And it could be in a minor or major way. What did you notice in those moments? What was going on with your three centers? You know, were you Gandalf, kind of all the centers are kind of in sync, or are things more, you know, fragmented, reactionary? I can't think clearly, or I'm flooded, or I start to react and I go from 0 to 80 in my response, or I shut down and I freeze. So I hope that offers something for our journey we are on as we are learning about encountering evil.